This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio.
WGN Chicago.
720 WGN.
609. I guess it depends on how you score it and whether or not you think it's been a good week in Cleveland. Andre Darlis is there now, joining Pat Brady, joining Anna DeVontis, joining Rokan. We'll check in with any and all of them coming up, starting with Andre, of course, at 6:30 in just a few minutes. But we begin with developments in the independent map situation. Now, Dave, I think you might remember this story. The independent maps is a constitutional amendment that would read that would allow, by way of the public's view, an ability to draw the maps up in a fair way so that you would actually be able to vote for people. And this sounds crazy in Illinois. Vote for people who could do you some good. Vote for people who you believe in, and allow people to run in districts that have previously been set up politically. The system literally has been rigged where people couldn't even run. And there have been uncontested races, and therefore the map looks like a giant cookie cutter that's broken into crumbly pieces, all for the sake of keeping those in power in power.
Isn't this a logical idea, Steve?
It's a logical idea, Dave, and that's why we're having so much trouble getting it done in the great state of Illinois, your home and mine. Dennis Fitzsimons joins me. Good morning, Dennis.
Good morning, Steve.
Thanks for all the work you continue to do for independent maps. Explain the, because I explained it in the 6:10 fashion. You know, I get up very early. Explain wherever I left the holes, the fundamentals of this, before we get to what the judge said yesterday.
Well, the fundamentals are, as you said, we are trying to really get the voters to be able to vote in November on an amendment that would put the responsibility for drawing legislative district maps in the hands of an independent commission, a nonpartisan independent commission. And this is what we've been working on for 18 months. The Constitution raises or sets a very high bar to get a citizen initiative on the ballot. And we got our over 565,000 signatures that we submitted. The Board of Elections validated those signatures. And we always knew that this was going to be challenged in court. The constitutionality of the amendment would be challenged. And we always expected it to go to the Supreme Court. So what happened yesterday was not unexpected, a little bit disappointing, but not unexpected. And we always thought this would be decided in the Supreme Court, and that's the next step.
All right, so there's no great disappointment amongst those. It would have been a pleasant surprise if the judge had ruled differently.
That's correct. Yeah, you know, given that it's Cook County, given the track record, we just assumed this issue is so important that it would go to the Supreme Court one way or the other. The other side would have appealed if they lost, and we knew we were going to appeal if we lost, and we did.
The whole point of this, by the way, is public understanding of it and not having it fall into some wonky neighborhood where people just glaze over and don't connect, because this is vitally important to you. As you get up and you go to work this morning, as you get your kids ready for whatever they're doing this summer, camp, school, whatever, this is vitally important to you. Frankly, this is way more important than what's going on in Cleveland, what's going on next week in Philadelphia, because this affects your life day to day, doesn't it?
That's right. It's not an issue that's top of mind for a lot of voters, but when you think that a Gallup poll ranks Illinois 50th out of 50 states in citizen confidence of state government, and then when those same citizens go to the polls and vote and they only have one candidate to vote for, it creates voter cynicism, lack of turnout, because people just don't think their votes count. So that's what we are trying to eliminate, or try to help eliminate, is this pervasive cynicism that voters have that the whole system is rigged. And this is one of the pillars that enables consolidation of power for incumbent protection, excuse me.
So what specifically, if it's even translatable in the language, did the judge rule wasn't doable to kick it out of court yesterday?
So the judge ruled that redistricting in general is fair game for a citizen initiative. However, in the same ruling, the judge rejected the amendment language that actually would allow citizens to create an independent commission for redistricting. According to this judge interpretation, it would be virtually impossible to create a truly independent and impartial redistricting commission where everything happened out in the open. And it's a little bit frustrating because they're creating such a narrow window, if you buy this interpretation, that it would reduce and diminish the citizens' opportunity to change their own constitution.
So if I'm understanding you correctly, the judge said that there would be no fair way to do this or no way to come up with an impartial panel. Isn't that the entire basis of our judicial system? Because doesn't that say that we could never come up with a jury of folks to handle a trial? It seems to me that extension's not crazy.
Well, I think what the judge is saying is that there were, in her opinion, impermissible suggestions that we made in this amendment for additional elected officials to participate in this. And she said that's overstepping the bounds. Now, this judge also disagreed with certain things that Judge Mikva had ruled on the independent map amendment at that point. So, again, this is why we feel we've filed for an expedited appeal with the Supreme Court so the Supreme Court can weigh in on this.
Did this have to be filed in Cook County initially?
Yes, our lawyers felt that that was the best route to take.
Okay, so there is obviously, and I know this to be true.
And once again, let me just interrupt for a second, because a group, the plaintiffs in this case, were the People's Map, a group which is somewhat interesting in that they have not, as required, filed any expenditures or any contributions, and these are things that are required by the Board of Elections when you are a citizen initiative committee, and we don't know who's funding this. This litigation is extremely costly, and right now there is no indication. We have filed over $3 million in expenditures and $4 million in contributions for our side of this fight. You know, we are representing the voters, but those who are representing the status quo give no indication of who's funding their effort.
And how long can they get away with doing that?
Well, the Associated Press came out with an article on Tuesday that pointed all these things out, and we'll see what the Board of Elections does with this.
The Board of Elections, there is some skepticism there as well, of course. So when does it get to the Illinois Supreme Court, and when will you know that they'll take it and look at it, or is that an automatic?
So there's a deadline of August 26th for the November ballot to be certified. And the Supreme Court would need to rule by that period of time. So we should be on the ballot. We have had a negative ruling, but the Supreme Court has ruled on these type of cases before in an expedited fashion to make sure the deadline for the November ballot was was reached.
Before I let you go, now, to just make sure there's clarity here from my vantage point, I'm for this. I think people are clear on that. I've also contributed to this financially, and I would do it again.
Thank you for that.
And but the point of me bringing it up is not a pat on the back, but also to let people know that because of the cost of getting this done, if you can chip in, I highly recommend you do so. So how do people contribute?
Well, if your listeners would like to learn more about the independent map effort, go to mapamendment.org. There is certainly a lot of information that explains this very thoroughly, and also a donate button. So we would certainly appreciate, as I mentioned, these litigation situations are very expensive, and we also have an ad campaign that we will be running to continue to try to create awareness of this issue. So people understand that this particular ruling is really reducing the power that Illinois voters have to change their own constitution.
And my words, not yours, but if you want to break the back of, in this case, Mike Madigan and his cronies, and in previous cases, the Republicans who were in power who set this system up, where every 10 years they get to redraw the map so it's most beneficial to them. And if you really want power back in the state, this is the first of many big steps that we can start taking to fix the state of Illinois. So you really need to get involved. And don't feel pressured to write a check, but do feel pressured to go to the website, read about this, spread it around socially, and tell your friends. Website again, Dennis, is?
The website again is mapamendment.org, and join the more than 565,000 Illinois voters who've already signed a petition to want and have to have an opportunity to vote on this amendment in November. And that's what we are going to try to convince the Supreme Court is so essential to eliminate or try to eliminate the pervasive cynicism that exists in Illinois right now.
It's crucial. I mean, it's absolutely crucial. And again, I'll just start end where I started. It's frankly way more important than what's going on in Cleveland or in Philadelphia. This is our life, and this is our life every day. So please get involved. Thank you, Dennis. We'll be in touch, obviously.
Steve, thanks.
What to see, what's out at the show. I need to know the place and when.
Nick's theme song is Nick DiGilio joins us.
Ian's Cochran Show. And what he says will make us stay or go. He is Nick at night. DiGilio.
Got a bunch of movies coming out. Good morning, buddy.
Morning.
You want to run through the list here for the big weekend of movies? How about the absolutely fabulous movie? This is based on the British TV show, or is the British TV show?
It's based on the British TV show, which I love. Jennifer Saunders and Joanna Lumley. And they have to flee to France after they almost kill Kate Moss by throwing her into the Thames.
Kate Moss, the skinny model?
Yes.
Could she not swim? If she tossed Kate Moss into Thames, would she not float?
I just keep thinking of Monty Python and the Holy Grail, and if she floated, she'd be a witch.
So, at this point, would we like Ab Fab the movie or not?
I would love it. Of all the movies that are opening this weekend, that's the one I'm most looking forward to. I think Absolutely Fabulous is a hilarious show.
Yeah, it's really loving.
Yeah.
Have we gone too far in the Ice Age movies? Ice Age Collision Course. How many is this now?
Four? Yeah.
Are we too far down the road on this?
Yeah, I thought we were too far down on the road in the first one, quite frankly.
Mm-hmm.
But all the big names are back. You know, Ray Romano, Dennis Leary, John Leguizamo, Queen Latifah, Stifler. They're all back. And at this point, they're trying to dodge meteors and, like, the world is ending. And they go on a big journey to try and stop everything from happening. It looks relatively obnoxious. It's the fourth one, and for some reason, every animated movie that's come out this year has made a lot of money. So this one will probably do the same.
What about Cafe Society? What's that?
That's Woody Allen's new movie that he wrote and directed. And it stars Jesse Eisenberg as a writer who ends up going to Hollywood, leaving New York, going to Hollywood, working for his uncle, played by Steve Carell, who's in the movie business. Falls for Steve Carell's much younger mistress, which, you know, that proves it's a Woody Allen movie, Kristen Stewart, and can't have her and ends up romancing Blake Lively. So, you know, real tough time for Jesse Eisenberg there with those two women.
I don't understand the Kristen Stewart thing, because she couldn't be less interesting to me, but every time I see her on screen, she's pretty compelling.
You know, I got to tell you something. The thing about this is, these two, this will be the third movie where they've played a couple, Jesse Eisenberg and Kristen Stewart, and they really, really work well together.
Yeah.
They did a film called American Ultra a couple of years ago. They were a wonderful couple in that. And if you've never seen the movie Adventureland from 2009, which is one of the best coming of age movies of the past 10 years. They had phenomenal chemistry in that movie. And so, you know, I think it's good casting because they really work well together. And it's been a good year for Blake Lively. And, you know, I don't know. I run hot and cold on Woody Allen, mostly cold.
Yeah, I agree.
So, yeah.
He did a movie called Match Point a few years ago with Scarlett Johansson, which I thought was pretty great. But other than that, Lights Out, what is that?
That's a new horror movie, and if you turn the lights out, there's an evil woman who will kill you, but if you keep the lights on, she stays at bay.
Boy, that's a problem if you blow a bulb, huh?
Oh, that's a major problem. If there's, like, a blackout or something, man.
Come on, ComEd. There's a crazy lady in the house.
That's right.
And the Star Trek Beyond movie, is this the big moneymaker this weekend?
This is going to be the big one this weekend, yeah. It's the third in the reboot of the Star Trek series. And how many times do we say reboot a week, Steve? 20, 30 times?
Legally, yes.
Yeah. And the cast is back. This one, though, I'm interested in because Simon Pegg, who plays Scotty now, and, of course, is from Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, and all that, He wrote this one. So I'm interested because he's a great writer. He and Edgar Wright have written some really fun movies. And so he wrote this one, and they got Justin Lin to come in and direct it, who directed three of the Fast and the Furious movies. So I guess they're going for witty stuff and over-the-top action in this one. The first buzz on this movie was really negative, but now the reviews are coming in, and they steadily have gotten better and better. And the buzz is now pretty high on this thing. And it started out, you know, really low, but it looks like this people might enjoy this thing. It'd probably be the big box office winner this weekend.
And I'm spacing on the Captain Kirk actor. I like him, but what is his name?
Chris Pine.
Yeah,
Chris Pine.
Chris Pine, who's great, as far as I'm concerned, great and everything. But Chris Pine, I understand, is starting to do more of a Kirk impression. Is that fair?
Yeah, I mean, he was doing that in the first film. He's been doing that.
It looked like it was amped up for this one. Is that not? Maybe I just saw one scene.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen the film yet, but I've seen the trailers for it, and very well could be. I think everything is amped up in this one. Like, it looks like a crazy movie. The first trailer for this movie, it was nonstop action, stuff blowing up, and they cut the trailer to Sabotage by the Beastie Boys, and all the Star Trek fanatics were so angry. They were like, "What? Why? What the hell is a Star Trek movie doing with a Beastie Boys soundtrack?" And the guy who directed The Fast and the Furious, that's why it's going to be loud and crazy.
The next Nick production, RoboCop in Rosemont at MovieCo Wynn.
That's Tuesday, August 9th on the big screen. $10 to get in. Parking is free. One of the best science fiction movies and one of the funniest and most twisted satires of the 80s. I'm very happy to see RoboCop. I haven't seen it on the big screen since it came out in 1987, if you can believe that. It's almost 30 years old. So that's going to be Tuesday, August 9th. Tickets are on sale at carmike.com, CARMIKE.
All right, thanks, buddy. That's Nick DiGilio live this morning. And so will Andrea be from Cleveland next. Vic will handle the setup for your big story here. Then we'll talk to Andrea in Cleveland and then Chuck Todd and then more Andrea. And that's just this hour as we continue on the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
To those listening, please don't stay home in November. If you love our country and love your children as much as I know that you do, stand and speak and vote your conscience. Vote for candidates up and down the ticket who you trust to defend our freedom and to be faithful to the Constitution.
Lion Ted. You're a liar. Ooh. Bible high. Puts it down and then he lies.
You gotta love what Trump is freestyling. Donald J. Trump, DJ. Last night, Mrs. Cruz had to be hustled out of the convention center because the mob was trailing her with flaming clubs. All right, that's the only part of the story that's not true. Chuck Todd joins us live from Cleveland. Good morning, Chuck.
Good morning, Steve.
How is the zoo? Did you plan on being at the zoo this long?
I have to say, this is I can't imagine having more fun at a convention than I did last night. That was something else. I kept repeating Jack Buck when Ozzie Smith unfortunately hit a rare home run.
Right.
85 NLCS is like, I can't believe what I just saw. That's how I felt. It's like it was moment after moment, obviously Cruz being the huge thing, but even the little things like, I can't believe Trump abandoned Pence. I can't believe there was no moment last night. I can't believe Pence got his rollout messed up again. I mean, it is, I can't believe Cruz had the guts to do what he did. It was a gutsy decision, put his political career like it was chips at a poker table. Said, okay, I'm putting him on the ballot and betting that Trump loses in a landslide. I mean, just amazing drama.
Yeah, drama. Yeah, and to take it in reverse order there, because nobody breaks this stuff down better than you, I think you could argue on both sides of this. Trump's an idiot to give him the spot. Cruz is an idiot to pull what he did. Or maybe they both won.
Well, we're going to find out on November 8th. But yeah. Cruz is betting. Cruz is making a big bet. He's making a big bet. He thinks that Trump's going to lose and lose by a lot, and that eventually he'll be in, you know, he made a right side of history bet. And that moment will either end his career or turn him into president of the United States someday. You know what I mean? We will look back on that moment, that defining. And it's, it's amazing when you see somebody. I mean, I admire the guts. You know, a lot of people are going to look. A lot of people have strong opinions about Ted Cruz. Very polarizing career. But you got to say this. We lament politicians that are, you know, just tell us what we want to hear too often, or just do whatever the proper political advice is you do. He didn't do that. You got to give him. I give him that.
Yeah, no, I do too. I hope. Look, it's hard for me because I dislike these two guys both immensely. But I hope it's because you hurt my wife.
Now you're wondering how Mitch McConnell feels this morning. Right? I'm not sure what to think.
He just
tell Trump, "I told you so." And
I can't imagine the backstage conversations from the plagiarism start to the week to this, to Mike Pence rocketing the Trump approval ratings from 25 to 26%. I don't know what they come out of this week with.
No, I don't know how they do either. They don't come out of this cleanly. But look, I will tell you this. As bad as this convention feels in the first three nights, you can basically erase three bad nights with one great speech. All right? Al Gore didn't have the best convention in 2000, and then he had perhaps the most impactful acceptance speech, at least as far as a convention bump at getting yourself back into a race, as anybody had. George H.W. Bush. That his convention in 88, the Dan Quayle rollout was a disaster. All of those things, nothing went well. Didn't look like Reagan was really into him. And then he did his, you know, no new taxes, which eventually cost him re-election.
Right.
But electrified the party. The point is, Trump, you know, you can bail out a bad convention with one great speech when you're the nominee.
What does he do tonight? And we'll let you go on this. Is he prompter? Is he off prompter? If he's off prompter, all bets are off.
100% prompter. I was just talking with Don Jr., and I asked that. I said, how much does he practice? And he says, well, you know. And he goes, he's not the biggest practicer, but he's walked through it a few times. And they've been, you know, they actually installed prompters in headquarters because for all the kids, they had not given prompter speeches before. And you could tell some of the kids really did practice. I noticed, I thought Don Jr. did a very good job reading off a prompter. Because, by the way, it's very difficult.
Yeah, it is.
All right? It's not an easy thing to do, especially when you're doing left to right reading off of a prompter. You're not just looking at one screen. You have three in your eyes. So it's not an easy thing to learn. It's a skill. So it is going to be a prompter speech. But I do, you know, it's funny. Before last night, I worried that the room wouldn't give the energy to Trump that he would need to give a great speech. Because I wasn't convinced that room was really a Trump room. It always felt like a Republican room that had sort of acquiesced to Trump. But in a way, this is where Cruz electrified the place, for better or for worse. And I think it adds energy and vibe and juice to tonight in a way that this convention, as far as Trump was concerned, was missing. And that might help feed Trump tonight to give an energetic speech, because he does need to do that.
Any truth to the rumor Melania wrote the speech tonight?
That's not going anywhere there.
I'm not helping, am I? I assume you guys will be live in Philly Sunday?
Live in Philly Sunday, my friend.
All right, great talking to you. I know how busy this week.
We'll get there.
I know how busy this week is, man. I really appreciate you jumping on.
You got it.
All right, there you go. Chuck Todd from Meet the Press live in Cleveland. Back with more of Andrea, and she actually could come home now, Dave, because she walks into the convention center last night. She met Samantha Bee, who she loves.
Right.
From TBS show. Why am I spacing on the name of the show? Naked and Afraid. No, that's not it. Samantha Bee show, the former Daily Show correspondent. Right. Anyway, we'll get to that. We'll get to her Don King crossing the paths with Don King. And Andrea may have a boxing career out of this. Who knows? It's a cool song. And I think in the last year of the Drew Carey Show, it's the best thing about the Drew Carey Show. You can just hear the song and turn it off.
Mm-hmm.
Andrea rejoins us from Cleveland after opening night. So I was just mentioning off the air a couple minutes ago, you could probably come home now because you met Samantha Bee.
Oh, my gosh. How cool was that? And I wasn't the only geeked out reporter, too.
Yeah. Oh, come on. You were the Samantha Bee stalker.
I love her. I went up to her and I said, I love you. And she's like, thank you. You know, in her typical Samantha Bee, I love you too.
And by the way, the show calls Full Frontal. I forgot the name of the show. But it's a very funny show. And it's not just funny. I mean, she's doing a radio talk show with cameras.
Yeah, she's absolutely incredible. And, you know, she's wearing her Converse gym shoes, running around, tracking people down. And I felt good because we interviewed a lot of the same interesting characters, if you will. That's half the fun of this, Steve, is the speeches, of course, but what goes on in the concourse level. By the way, I've never had such a fonder appreciation for the United Center and for our numbering system in Chicago because the Q Center, if you want to go to the main level, that's the third floor. If you want to go to the basement, that's the fifth level. And I was still trying to figure this out.
Oh, that's interesting.
I'm not quite
sure why they do that. All right, so here's the thing I'm confused about, because I know you and Devlantis switched hotels in the middle of the night, but you're closer to downtown, but you're still not downtown. Now, I've been to Cleveland a million times. There are hotels downtown. Were they just all booked, or what's the story?
They must have been all booked. We were, myself, Anna, and Rokan were at a hotel very far out from the city, probably 40 minutes or so.
They were in South Bend, which is not that close to Cleveland.
Exactly. We were going to go to Pittsburgh. So we were far out, and we had Rokan saw the hotel and said, yeah, I'm not going to be staying here. It was more of a motel, kind of like the Bates Motel, if you will.
Right.
I just chalk it up to just an accident. You know, just
if you go into the lobby and there's body chalk and a body still within the chalk lines, that's probably a problem.
Well, Rose Room, I believe, had a burning cigarette in it. Mine had a man in it. which on any given day, I guess, wouldn't be a major problem, Steve.
Depends on the man.
right. Now, if it's you or Ennett, that's a different story.
Yeah, then it's an issue.
Mm-hmm. When I walked in and the man's wearing shorts and laying on the bed and said, this is my room, I said, okay, apparently it is. So I went down to the front desk. I said, can I have a room with a person that's not in it?
Yeah, I'm going to need an unoccupied room.
Right.
I'm funny like that.
So, long, convoluted, crazy, funny story. And then after Ro saw a rat kind of camping out in front of his room, he said, we need to switch hotels.
How about that?
Hotel or just like outside?
No,
it actually
right
turned out to be
right
a Republican delegate, just a short, hairy Republican delegate.
They found, he said he would endorse Trump if Cruz wouldn't. So,
all right. Speaking of rats, amongst the celebrities you bumped into last night were one of Cleveland's own former boxing promoter, Don King. What is he doing there?
Oh, my gosh. Let me set this up for you guys. Remember Pat Brady said he saw Don King in the Q Center the night before? Well, there's, I guess I use the word celebrity loosely, but there are celebrities and the like and people, sports figures, athletes walking around. And of course, the media jumps over, tries to get a quick interview. I saw a swarm of people, Steve. I'm talking maybe 50 to 60 reporters swarmed around, and I saw the hair. I said, oh, I bet that's Don King. Pat Brady's right. His hair's the exact same. Not as poofy on the top, but it's kind of gelled back, but still, that's how I recognized him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's wearing a jean jacket that was hand painted with all these sports figures on it and a big red, white, and blue scarf. So he's holding court. He's doing interviews, and he was typical Don King. This is a little bit of what he had to say to me.
Have you learned anything new about Donald Trump from this convention?
Yes, I learned that the party is in real live action and living color, because the party came here to me when Donald Trump asked me to speak in my hometown, and this party says the chairman of the party, the guy, Rip Van Winkle, because he slept through a revolution, you know what I mean? So he says that Don King can't talk because he's an ex-convict. I'm an ex-convict here. They don't want to send me to the penitentiary.
Yeah, so I wasn't quite, no one really was sure what he was talking about. It was highly entertaining, though.
You need Rosetta Stone to translate it. All right, stand by. More coming up with Audrey. We've got to take a break. Get your news next at 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show.
Or what did you think of Ted Cruz's speech?
I think it was awful. And quite frankly, I think it was selfish. And he signed a pledge. And it's his job to keep his word. And Donald Trump gave him the opportunity to speak here at this convention tonight. And I think it was too cute. And I think you saw by the end of the speech that the crowd was waiting for him to do the right thing and realized that once again he wasn't going to do it. And I think the performance you saw up there is why Ted has so richly deserved the reputation that he's developed on Capitol Hill.
Cold. Yeah, it's a cold night in Cleveland. The interesting thing to me is Rick Pearson joins us from Cleveland. You know, Rick, the interesting thing to me is if he was doing as I thought he may be doing, trying to honor his wife and protect his wife because, you know, Trump dumped on his wife months ago, why would he allow his wife to even be in the room knowing what was coming? He can't be so stupid as to not expect that he wouldn't get booed.
No, of course, and certainly the purpose of that speech was to say, you know, not only vote your conscience, but Donald Trump isn't my guy. And, you know, it was a very bold place in a primetime speech, in a 20-minute speech, to basically repudiate Trump. I mean, he made remarks about his wife. He accused his father of being part of an assassination plot to kill JFK.
Right.
And people are surprised that this guy is not bringing the wagons home and coming full circle and indoors. That's not Ted Cruz. That's never been Ted Cruz. I mean, you know, as that delegate said, he certainly has a reputation, and that's in part it's why he has no friends on Capitol Hill. But at the same time, too, this is all about looking ahead to 2020.
Well, and Chris Christie couldn't be smooching harder. He's still hoping that Mike Pence gets hit by a bus and he'll be able to be picked. The fact of the matter is Ted Cruz has needed a mirror for a long time and he just can't seem to find one. I can't imagine him being relevant in 4 years. Whether Trump wins or loses, there's no world that I currently live in. Here I go predicting again. There's no world that I currently live in where Ted Cruz is a player in 4 years.
I understand, but I will also tell you, you know, he set a demarcation point, unlike the others who, you know, as you mentioned, Christie and others who, after being trashed by Trump, you know, fall into line. He's created that demarcation point among, quote, establishment Republicans in the belief that this is Donald Trump. This is lightning in a bottle. It's not going to last. It's going to go away. And Cruz still has his campaign organization. I mean, he still has millions of dollars in that. He still has some supporters from his super PAC as well. So
can he keep that indefinitely, or what does he have to do with that money?
No, he can keep it as long as he keeps the campaign fund open, which of course that's what he certainly plans to do. But, you know, bottom line here, this is, you know, we're through 3 days of this convention, which is there's been tumult every day. And, you know, now here we come to the last day. It's Donald Trump's big speech. And more than ever, he has to pick up the pieces of his own convention. He's got to go to the base and try to rescue not only his convention, perhaps his campaign as well.
Who do you think's more nervous tonight, Trump about giving his speech or the people who want to have Trump elected about Trump giving his speech? Because I'm telling you, there's no way he's sticking to the teleprompter for a half an hour. He's just not going to do it.
Oh, and it frankly, this speech could last, you know, easily an hour or more. It's his chance to, you know, he is the single most watched person on television tonight. And that pretty much says everything, regardless of politics, says everything about Donald Trump.
Yeah, and some of it's like NASCAR, right? People are watching it to see if he crashes. Stand by.
Absolutely.
Stand by. I want to ask you about the NATO comments that he made in an interview with the New York Times. It's more with Rick Pearson in a second, host of the Sunday Spin. We'll get a plug-in for that show, too, in a moment. Mary's abandoned us. Normally, when Andrea is not here, and Andrea's in Cleveland, we'll hear from her in 10 minutes. David, you know, Mary joins us here in the Showcase studio.
Yes.
But now she's chosen to stay on the seventh floor. Could it be your High Karate or Old Spice? What are you wearing today?
I'm actually wearing...
Or is it a mixture of the two?
It's very strong, Dave.
It's the Old Spice.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you guys shower?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay, well.
Maybe it'll come down then.
The Steve Cochran Show.
Vote for the candidate who has never been a politician. Vote for the candidate who has never received a paycheck from our government. Vote for the candidate who can't be bought, sold, purchased, bribed, coerced, intimidated, or steered from the path that is right and just and true. And quite frankly, friends, vote for the one candidate who does not need this job.
Vote for Gary Johnson and William Weld. No, he didn't add that. Eric Trump last night. He's the other white Trump. I sort of feel bad for him. The older brother seems to get more of the spotlight. And when Dad calls you, as I mentioned yesterday, this is a quote from Trump. I'm not making this up. Calls you my douchiest son. That's not great. It's not funny, and it's not great.
I can't even imagine.
No. But anyway, I thought his speech was fine. I thought he did okay. I thought if Donald Trump shuts up and lets the kids talk, they're going to be fine. Ivanka will talk tonight. Rick Pearson is live in Cleveland. Andre will rejoin us in just a few minutes from there. On Sunday, I should say, on the Sunday Spin. Are you back here? Are you in Philadelphia? Where are you on Sunday?
I will be back in Chicago on Sunday. We'll be speaking to Pat Brady, who I know you'll be speaking with, as yep. well as Mark Fratella, who is a Donald Trump delegate. I featured him on the show last week, so we'll recap what happened here. We'll also be talking to somebody from that Independent Maps movement about the ruling by the Cook County Circuit Court judge yesterday that struck it from the November ballot, and now that case going to the Illinois Supreme Court.
Yeah, we had Dennis Fitzsimons on earlier to talk about it, and we'll encourage you. We'll play back that by way of podcast, obviously, but we'll encourage you to sniff around that. It's a little bit of a complex issue, but it's vitally important. All right, so everybody walking around Cleveland trying to figure out what's going to happen tonight. But before we get to that, let's get to NATO. Trump talked to the New York Times, well-regarded writer, reporter. And Trump said, listen, NATO, yeah, okay, yeah, we're part of NATO. But these times they are changing. And if Russia attacks one of the NATO countries, yeah, maybe we'll defend them. Maybe we won't. If they paid their bill, I mean, that's essentially what he says, right?
That's correct. And that's all kinds of great consternation going on. I mean, there's a lot of concern that the Republican platform, at the urging of Trump supporters, is very much pro-Putin. So, you know, he's already talked about how he thinks NATO ought to be reshaped, that it ought to be more focused on combating terrorism. But NATO is an alliance, and you're a member of NATO, and it's, you know, it's one for all. And to even raise the specter that for some reason that, you know, you wouldn't defend a NATO country, I mean, that belies the whole issue of national security, and that is a major, major issue for this election in November.
I think it's one of the dumbest things he said for the entire campaign over the last year, because things don't happen in a vacuum. I guarantee you this is being talked about in government headquarters all over the world. And people saying things like, well, if this knucklehead actually gets elected, what does that mean for us? Because what America says and does matters. And even though Trump will change his mind whenever he has to change his mind or thinks it's politically expedient, it's a terrible thing to throw out there in public. Because it's not, listen, kids, it's not like we're not getting anything from NATO. He's not wrong about countries ought to pay their bills, but that's a separate argument.
It's a completely separate argument, and especially, you know, we had Daryl Issa, the veteran congressman from California, here with the delegation yesterday, and he was saying things like, make America great again. The Trump slogan is code, and that delegates ought to help define what that means. And in Issa's mind, that means that, you know, it's restoring America to its leadership position. But you have to question, how does America find itself as a leader among the world? Something Republicans say that the Obama administration has fallen down on the job on. But how does America restore its leadership position when you have the Republican presidential nominee making comments like, well, maybe we'll defend you, maybe we won't when it comes to the NATO alliance?
And part two of that foolishness yesterday and damaging nature of things is his vice presidential nominee, the electric Mike Pence, is on stage talking about how we're going to elect someone that's not going to abandon our friends, who's going to stand with our allies at the exact time that the story's going to press.
Correct. And again, here's that kind of Mike Pence playing the counter Donald Trump. And who wins in that? You know, certainly we've kind of seen how Donald Trump really has treated Mike Pence, his running mate, in not in a great way. Even last night, give Ted Cruz 21 minutes for his speech, pushes Pence largely out of the prime time spot. You know, a lot of people look here in Cleveland are looking at Pence as, here's the guy, the reliable, strong conservative that can help bring the base back to Donald Trump. Many conservatives doubting that Donald Trump is even a conservative at all. But at the same time, you know, who do you believe in this on this ticket? Do you believe the guy who would be president, or do you believe the guy who would be the running mate?
So what is your day now today? What do you, what does the news come to you, or you got to go sniff some stuff out?
Well, there's always some stuff going on with the delegation. We had a delegate who was kicked out last night over racist social media comments.
Oh,
somebody
nice.
That we talked about in May who was using a social media handle of white pride.
Good Lord.
You know, some things like that. But no, I mean, there's always something going on with the delegation. There's a delegation breakfast that's coming up. But also, it's, you know, it's a lot of people very anxious to see this speech tonight before they head back to Chicago and back to Illinois. But unlike any convention I've ever seen, people like to leave singing Kumbaya and having the unity rally, but that's not happening here.
No, and it's not good when the guy that finished number two has to have his wife escorted out of the arena by security so she's not harmed by the home team.
Correct.
Thank you, Rick Pearson. Sunday spin, 7 a.m. Nice job by you.
Thank you, Steve.
7:28, back after this with a big story. Live from Cleveland, Andre Darlis next on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
He's a man known for a large personality, a colorful style, and lots of charisma. And so I guess he was just looking for some balance on the ticket. I accept your nomination to run and serve as Vice President of the United States of America. When Donald Trump becomes President of the United States of America, the change will be huge.
Hey, hey!
Don't be funny. Seriously, if you're in politics and you have the urge to be funny, lay down until the urge passes. Just painful. 7:43. Unless he's air-kissing Mike Pence, Pat Brady is standing by. Let's go to Cleveland again. Good morning, Pat.
Morning. I'm not an air-kisser, buddy.
No, I know. You're full on the mouth. That was such an odd moment in a week of odd moments when Trump comes out and he fake kisses Mike Pence. Again, why am I trying to make sense of any of this?
Yeah, I was back actually in the back of the Coliseum trying to block the teleprompter.
Well, that's the big question for today. Will Trump stay on prompter? The general feeling on the show is less than 5 minutes.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure if this is just flying by the seat of the pants or it's scripted, but, you know, last night he steps out there to step on Cruz, so I can't imagine this is his big moment, that he's not going to do something off the script.
Yeah, well, Chuck Todd said an hour ago that everybody they've talked to said that it's pre-written, it'll be on prompter, and the Trump people are saying he's going to stick to it. Okay, sure he is. Uh-huh, and his hair's not orange.
Yeah, I agree with you. I would think he's not going to be able to resist the temptation to do something outrageous, but let's see. I don't know.
Maybe he should have Ivanka close for him instead of open for him because, you know, you always remember the last thing.
Yeah, well, we'll see what he says tonight. It'd be nice if some Republicans started talking about what they're actually going to do to make the country work better and keep us safe, but we haven't heard much about that. We have established that Hillary's a liar.
What? Is that true? Maybe a chant will break out that she ought to be in jail. That'll be helpful.
I think we were talking about yesterday. There's a lady that sits about eight rows in, and she's got this voice you can hear all the way across the Coliseum, and her thing is Hillary for prison, and she screams it out. I don't know if you can hear it on TV.
What is a favorite thing you've seen on the floor amongst the throng?
The people that scream. They'll just scream randomly. Somebody like Paul Ryan. I'm like, what was that about?
So
but
just
the lady I was telling you about, 10 rows in, I mean, I don't know who's married to her, but that has got to be painful because she screams and it goes all the way across the room.
So just random outbursts from various delegations.
Yeah, and they're always Hillary for prison.
There's a phrase the kids say now called face palm. You know what a face palm is, right?
Yeah.
You know, drop your face in your palm because you just can't take it anymore. I always tell people that work for me on the show here, I said, if I start rubbing my giant head, if I just take my hand and just start rubbing the old forehead and stuff, you know that I'm not happy. The face palm thing seems to go on quite a bit. Is there statistically more face palming this week than any other convention?
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of that. And you know what else was doing last night? Has been the backsides of the Coliseum there to watch the spectacle of the Trump kids walking around and the media following them. And so something seemed wrong about that.
You know, the media collectively, and of course, Pat, we're not part of it, but the media collectively can't wait to anoint whatever the shiny thing is. I'm amused by three straight days of discussion of Don Jr. running for mayor of New York based on one speech.
Well, that's Obama got to start. One speech. Now he's president, so you never know.
All right, so we're going to talk about Ted Cruz with Pat Brady next.
Floating and bloated in geoparty constipation. We read the tweeted, defeated Carson, Rubio, and Cruz. But nobody wants to talk about the elephant in the room. The Trumpster, the dumpster of speeches loaded full of smut. They would have been better off with Donald, last name Ensign Duck. Conventions of Republicans. This is Conventions of Republicans.
All right, I got about a minute left with Pat Brady, then we'll jump back to Andrea live from Cleveland.
Watch and see.
So everybody knew, you know, mid-afternoon to late afternoon and certainly minutes before the speech that Ted Cruz wasn't going to endorse Trump, but then all, in quotes, hell broke loose. What was your take on all of that?
You know, I'm not sure if that was actual surprise or if it was, theater set up by Trump, you know, to create the conflict. I don't know. And I'm not sure exactly what Cruz's calculation is, but I don't think any of the speeches were really glowing endorsements of the nominee.
Yeah, I don't, but I also don't think the Ted Cruz thing was necessarily good or bad for either one of them. Ted Cruz, and again, in my world, is not going to be relevant in 4 years. So whatever play he thinks he's making now is, you know, literally for the night, at the most for the week. In regards to Trump, Trump gives him a slot. Maybe that's stupid on some level. Maybe it's not. We know he doesn't strategize. We know Trump doesn't think beyond what he says at that moment. So is it possible Trump said, yeah, I'll put him up there and he'll come to his senses and he'll endorse me? And he was surprised. I don't understand the point of even putting him on.
I don't either, particularly. But he did walk out and ran on his parade. Trump did, walked out there and kind of stole the show at the end. But I haven't. Somebody's going to write a book, and I'd love to know the calculation on that. But I agree with you. It's so disorganized, his campaign, that I don't know if they would have had the forethought to think that through.
All right, so your day today is to continue to follow the lunacy. I look forward to your report tomorrow on tonight's speech with Trump. Going off prompter, less than 5 minutes?
I'd say 7.5.
Oh, 7.5. Okay, I'm at 5. Everybody else on the show is less than that.
I ran into Andrea. How's she doing?
She's doing fine now because you are a hotel hero.
I know.
You should start your own website.
I told a little fib to get her to that room, but I'm glad I could help her out.
You did a big thing. You saved the lives of Anna DeVlantis and Andrea Darlis from a very seedy hotel somewhere in the suburbs of Ohio.
I just want to make Cleveland. WGN great again, Steve.
thank you, my friend. Andrea Darlis is live in Cleveland as well. I think Hotel Hero is the right name for him, don't you?
Oh, when you just said that, I just jumped up with glee. I'm in his hotel, but it's a nice, big, large, happy hotel.
We should clear this, by the way. You're in his hotel. You're not in his hotel room.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm not in his hotel room. I'm now with the Illinois delegation. By the way, Sapelsa says hi.
Hi, Marky.
Everybody from Channel 9 says hi.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Good to see Mark up at this hour. Mark doesn't know this hour exists most days.
Mark is in his little T-shirt and his little running shorts, too, to kind of give a visual to
the ladies.
Yeah,
to the ladies listening.
Yeah.
The Illinois delegation breakfast, do they accomplish anything at this, or do they just eat?
No, you know, it's interesting you ask that, because I went in and it's kind of sparsely attended. It's mainly reporters. I saw Pearson. I know he had talked with you a little earlier. Of course, folks from Channel 9, everyone else who's here, the media. And I said, where is everybody? And they said, oh, they kind of filtered down. You know, the breakfast, it's a buffet. It starts at 8, and then they'll do some speeches. Well, really, I saw maybe, I would say, 10 people from the Illinois delegation, including state reps and the like. And I said, where's everybody? And they said, well, not everybody stayed for the whole thing. I said, really? This is your big rah-rah moment, especially tonight. But, yeah, some of the Illinois delegation, I think, Steve, that what they wanted to do was get back to the business of the state of Illinois, the business at hand back home.
Mm-hmm. In other words, mm-hmm. They were bored in Cleveland and they went to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Pretty much, yeah. Pretty mm-hmm. much.
Yeah.
My Uber driver, by the way, yesterday, this is very funny. When I checked into the Bates Motel, I hopped in the Uber to down to the convention center, and I had a school bus, a retired school bus driver. He was 85 years old driving an Uber. He was a character. He basically took me on a tour of Cleveland. I said, I really need to get to Radio Row.
Let me show you over here about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Yeah, I'm sure. Proud of his city.
He was very proud of his city, yeah. So he took me on a little detour. And, yeah, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I think a lot of people are going to be hitting that today.
Well, you should do that. I mean, look, you're in Cleveland. You should definitely get to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame today before you go in to see the calamity that is the final night of the RNC and then head to Philadelphia next week. I have no great faith in Philadelphia either. I mean, not the city. The city of Cleveland's done a fine job by all accounts, and the city of Philadelphia will as well. But the convention next week will be just as aggravating. Aren't you glad we're here to cover it for you?
You know what's funny, though? I mean, you have to look at the funny stories. When you're on the floor and you see everybody, it almost becomes a contest of who can dress the most outlandish. You know, I saw elephant skirts and elephant hats. You know, the craziness and the stories that come from the floor and the actual people, those are a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, that is the thing for conventions, right? Dress up like a fool and scream your head off because these are the most politically connected people in the country. The party is talking to itself largely this week and not to the people that will actually elect them or choose the other side. All right, we'll catch up again in a few minutes. More with Andrea on the way. She is either at the Q Center or close. And Sapelsa, of course, is covering it for Channel 9. You can see Mark there on all 48 newscasts we now have on Channel 9 starting at 4 o'clock. It is 7:57. We're back with the news next on 720 WGN.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah,
Dean Richards live from Channel 9. Hello, buddy.
What's up?
We're just all wrapped up in Cleveland. Ooh, we're on pins and needles.
No, it's Snubblepalooza.
I just want you to know, if you ever run for president, I will make a speech and mention your name more than once.
I appreciate that, because I am planning on running.
I know you're. And even with all the troubles in your past, I think you'll be fine.
I think that's what's going to put me over the top.
Your troubles?
America is looking for somebody who is troubled.
America's most troubled candidate, Dean Richards, runs for president. Well, 2020, you'll be tan, rested, and ready. Why not?
That's right.
All right, so let's start with the show business, because we have Joel McHale coming up in a few minutes. I hope you'll join us for that.
I wouldn't miss it for the world.
Jeremy Piven, Chicago actor, star of Entourage, apparently killed a guy with his car.
Well, not exactly.
Oh, what happened?
But he did send a guy to a hospital.
What happened?
He was going to the Grove in the Los Angeles area. That's a big, fancy shopping center.
Yeah, been there many times.
And I guess he was driving there and parks his car, opens his car door, as many of us are want to do.
Generally how you get out, yeah.
And did not notice that a bicycle was coming up on his left. He hits the bicycler. He opens his door. The bicycler can't stop fast enough. Hits the door, falls off the bike, and is fairly severely injured. Had to be taken away by an ambulance. Required stitches. Was taken to a hospital. Jeremy Piven did not get a ticket. There were no eyewitnesses, apparently, for the whole thing, so they couldn't give him a ticket for this, but said that he was very compliant. And
well, I don't know how that's his fault. As much as I am not a fan of the annoying little Piven, you know, you can't look behind you when you're opening a door. Nobody does that.
Well, I'm not sure legally what's required.
Opening your door without looking, is that a ticket now?
I think you are supposed to look to make sure that it's safe.
Yeah, I think they call it dooring.
Are you serious?
Yeah, they actually have names for that because it happens all the time. Yeah,
I prefer to call it adoring.
You're supposed to look. I'm not sure about the ticket thing, but yeah.
Jeremy Piven is an unpleasant little fellow, but I don't think he's trying to kill people with his car door. Dean?
I've never had an unpleasant situation with him.
Yeah, he's not a good guy. And I'm right and you're wrong.
He was walking down Michigan Avenue a couple of weeks ago.
Is that when he hit the guy with the car door?
He stopped. I think it was Brian Noonan who was on the air.
Mm-hmm.
And he stopped and was very pleasant, talked to Brian. Didn't need to do that.
That was nice of him.
For an unpleasant fellow, that was nice of him.
Yeah. Well, it's been 10 years since I've talked to him. I should probably give him a break. But why would I do that when I haven't done it for Gwen Stefani?
No, I would strongly encourage you to hold your grudges.
Mm-hmm. Paula Ferris. We love Paula Ferris. What a sweet woman. What a lovely woman from Channel 5. She goes to ABC, seems to be the big rising star at ABC. They throw her in the View chair. And just like so many women who have done The View, she's now out of show business. Is that accurate?
Ba-dum-bum. That's the that's what reports say is going to happen. They say that, here's probably what really is sealing her fate. ABC is saying that the reports that are out are untrue, that she's going to be fired from The View. It's exactly what they said right before they fired Michelle Collins from, from The View. And any time, Steve can verify this, because God knows it's happened to him 20, 30, 40, 50 times.
We lose track.
When management says everything's going great, don't worry.
You're out by Friday.
Start packing your bags. Get a U-Haul and start packing your bag.
There are subtle signals when you're going to get fired in show business. One is nobody returned your call. Two is people look away from you like you have leprosy and try to avoid you in the hallway. And three is an abundance of cardboard boxes suddenly show up in front of your door. Or, as happened to me prior to being fired here in 2010, 3 days before they fired me, the locksmith showed up at the wrong day and changed the lock on my door.
Oh, that's fantastic.
That's tremendous.
That's fantastic. You really should write a book about that.
How to get fired?
Yeah.
Getting fired in style.
The warning signs.
That's a book.
That's a bestseller.
That's a bestseller.
Who has more experience than you, really?
I'm the king of fired. Paula Ferris. I love Paula Ferris. I think she's a TV star. I think she ought to be doing something with ABC. What's the matter with these people?
She'll be fine. You know, the View is, that's a revolving door there. I mean, they've had nothing but trouble there since Rosie O'Donnell left the show. That's really the last time they've had huge ratings.
One of the rumors I saw is that Whoopi ate her. Is that true?
Ate Rosie O'Donnell?
No, Paula Ferris.
Paula Ferris.
She's more bite-sized.
I don't believe so. Okay. I don't think that's the case.
Sarah Bareilles. Oh, what a talent. What a great singer. What happened to her?
She is. She is recovering from surgery. Got a couple of surgery stories, actually, this morning.
Mm-hmm.
One about Sarah, who is recovering from surgery to remove a fibroid from her uterus. They say that she is at home right now and taking it easy and binge-watching Game of Thrones. Nothing says recover from surgery.
Your mood.
Nothing says healing like watching binge-watching Game of Thrones. So,
Not owning and operating my own uterus, but knowing women who've gone through this, it's an uncomfortable thing. So good luck to her.
It's not a good thing. Yeah. We wish her well. And one of the things that's trending this morning is Sharon Doherty's battle with breast cancer. She's been going through this since March of last year, battling breast cancer. Last August, she filed a lawsuit against her former business manager, who she claims neglected to pay her health insurance premiums. Her health insurance lapsed, so she currently does not have any health insurance while she's in the middle of a breast cancer battle.
Yikes.
Yesterday, she posted some pictures on her Instagram of her and her mother and a friend shaving her hair off, apparently going through chemo right now. And it's very moving. It's sort of affirming because they're goofing around and they're making funny shapes in her hair before they ultimately shave it all off. But the bottom line of the whole thing is this is kind of a tragic thing when someone's going through breast cancer and there's no health insurance there for her to cover it.
Yeah, and if somebody goes, well, she made a bunch of money, she was on a couple of hit shows, do you know how much these procedures cost? They're
right. Unbelievably expensive.
Dave Richards, the entertainment editor, Channel 972.
Wintrust Community Bank's Hour continues. Dean Richards with me. We're very excited to have Joel McHale join us, very famous television superstar. Host of Talk Soup, very funny stand-up comedian. Have you ever seen Joel do stand-up?
I don't think
I mean, this is his bread and butter, man. This is his home game. This is his sweet spot. He's great. And he's here to announce his run for the White House. Congratulations, and I'm endorsing you.
Thank you very much. This is my announcement. Choosing right now.
Do you have a platform?
No, it's coming together right now. Mm-hmm. Not really sure.
Do you believe in anything?
No, but... by the end of this conversation, I will.
Sounds like perfect qualifications.
Right.
There you go.
Sound like our kind of guy.
Yeah. It's like the lights are off and I'm feeling around and I'll find some stuff.
Now, you're doing clubs. You're a big superstar. You don't need to be doing the clubs. Is this some secret plan for an upcoming Big Shot cable special? What's going on here?
It's mostly, you know, trying to remember stuff and trying new stuff. Okay. No, I mean, it hopefully will be a lot of a combination of all those things. So,
so you're just trying to get out of the house and away from your family for a few weeks.
That is absolutely right, which, again, part of my platform. leave your family, because that apparently doesn't work if you constantly brag about how you're a father.
Although I saw on Joel's Twitter page that he just celebrated his 20th wedding anniversary.
That's right.
Of wedded bliss. Wedded bliss.
No, that's to four different women, Dean. Oh, that's a sum total.
I did not read the full post.
Yes. I have a reality show coming out about it. Great.
How old are your kids now?
11 and 8.
And are you so coaching? Are you doing the whole coaching dad thing?
Just life coaching. that's it. Just giving them advice constantly. My kids, I was very into sports. My kids are, one of them's kind of into sports. The other one is constantly like, why would I do that? Why would I throw that ball? There's no point.
Because then you just got to go get it.
Yeah, and then the ball rolls away, and then he goes like, well, there goes that. And then he's like, I'm going to go do something I like doing. And then he walks away. So it's not – my wife and I both were very competitive. So it's like having a small Gandhi around all the time. Because as everyone knows, Gandhi was enormous.
Yeah, and Gandhi was way into sports as well, Dean. You don't know this. Gandhi, rugby superstar for years.
Yes. Huge athlete, built like an ox.
The pictures don't.
Ben Kingsley added about 30 pounds of muscle for the movie back in the 80s.
Yeah, the pictures don't do it justice. All right, so you're going to be at Zany's in St. Charles tonight or all weekend?
Just tonight.
And then you're doing the other Zany's?
Not anything scheduled.
Don't you have a sense,
again,
Dean, that
said,
if it goes well,
way along. I guess I'm doing San Jose in the next week.
Okay. Normally when people come in to do Zany's, they do all the clubs. What happened? Did you offend someone?
Yes. A lot of people. I can go down the list. It starts with Michael Jordan.
Right. Right.
Steve, as you mentioned, he's a huge superstar.
Superstar.
You know, you don't.
Superstar.
Yeah, he doesn't. He's got a new show coming up on CBS. He's busy.
Yeah.
He's busy with, you know, prepping his new show. He can't be here all weekend.
Yeah, I'm trying to get on that show.
Well, I heard that you were actually the star of the show.
Oh, well, great.
Starting to look good for you.
This is great. Thank you.
Let me tell you more. It's called The Great Indoors.
Right.
And apparently we'll be on CBS this fall.
Yep. Me and Michael Jordan. Everyone knows about it.
No, Michael
like
Jordan. This might be the worst plug ever. Michael Jordan is not on the show, but I appreciate the fact that you're trying to get him on the show because that'd be a solid move by you. What's the premise of The Great Indoors? Are you a private detective?
No, but good guess. I play kind of a John Krakauer-like journalist or Bear Grylls who has been out in the field working for years, and then the magazine he works for folds, and it becomes a website, kind of like BuzzFeed, and I am kind of the face of the – they're like, you're coming in, and you're going to be like the Martha Stewart of the website.
That's a funny idea.
And,
funny idea.
Never – the guy's never worked in – an office ever in his life, and now he has to deal with millennials and deal with a boss, and it's a workplace comedy, and hopefully it'll work and be funny. We've got Stephen Fry, the kind of legendary
he's great
British comedian, Chris Mintz Plasse, who played McLovin in Superbad a few years ago, and he's super funny. And so
what about Ted Cruz? He's available. Is Ted Cruz on the show?
Yes, he is too. He and Michael Jordan are roommates, and that alone is
the wacky neighbors.
So funny, a lot of your conscious jokes coming up.
Do we have a love interest for you in the show?
Yes, it's me, Michael Jordan, and Ted Cruz are fighting over
Jan Brady.
Yeah, we're fighting over the woman that plays Jan Brady.
Yeah,
from the 60s and 70s.
All right, well, that makes total sense.
It all makes a lot of sense. Actually, it's the woman's name is Susanna Fielding, and she is a British stage actress. And she plays the daughter of Stephen Fry, who, of course, my character's interested in. And she's absolutely great. So,
are there Joel McHale love scenes?
Yeah, they're very intense, uncomfortable to a point, actually.
Is she in them, or are you alone?
It's alone, of course. And then I send the tapes to her. It's really weird. Not necessarily family. And strange that CBS is making this move. It's very bold.
Well, broadcast TV, they got to get some people involved. And now that you're involved, yeah. I like their chances as well. You're going to be at Zany's in St. Charles tonight. Dean, write this down. It's 7 and 9:15.
Oh, two shows.
7 and 9:15. So and 9:15. Sit there and wait for the next show to happen, and it'll be a whole different thing or very similar.
Right, and they treat it like a train, Dean. So if you're on the 7 and you stay for the 9, a guy in a conductor suit comes out and takes an extra cover charge from every table.
Yeah, it seems like that seems reasonable to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just put your ticket right on the back of your seat, and they'll punch it.
Zanies.com or the box office number 630-524-0001. Last time I saw Joel do stand-up, I think it was at this big arena in Peoria. And he crushed it, just killed it.
Oh, God bless you.
Yeah, you're great. You're so great.
This should be a lot different. A lot of tears, a lot of heartfelt monologues.
Joel McHale's Night of Poetry, tonight at Zany's.
Yes. It'll be made up on the spot.
Zany's.com. Good talking to you, man. Good luck with the CBS show. Come back. We'll plug it for real.
Right on. Thank you so much, you guys. I really appreciate it.
See you, buddy.
See you.
He's not funny at all.
I'm guessing he's in California, too, so he's on like early. 2 hours earlier time and still that funny.
I love him. You've interviewed him, haven't you?
I think I have.
Yeah, he's a good dude. He's about 7.5 feet tall. Very tall dude.
He's a very tall glass of water on his Twitter account also this morning, because that's really how I spend most of my day. Mm-hmm. He's asking people, says, tomorrow, come to Zany's in St. Charles. He posted this last night. Would somebody please bring me a Chicago-style deep dish hot dog?
He's so close.
I think he's got
so close.
Slightly mixed up, but that's not a terrible idea, really.
No.
A deep dish pizza, or a hot dog, rather.
You know, he's doing all of Melania Trump's act. I don't know if you know that.
Didn't know that.
Yeah,
that's what he's doing. Is making the rounds this week.
All right, buddy. I'll see you later. Big story with Andrea live from Cleveland next on 720 WGN.
Ryan Dempster. Steve!
Freeman, oh, he caught it right into the palm of Dempster's glove.
Ooh,
that is a little smile there from Dempster.
What would Harry say right now about this win?
Well, I gotta tell you, there's a lot of champagne in here. I haven't seen this much champagne since my wedding. We had a party just like this. It was phenomenal. Go Cubs!
That was outstanding.
Ryan Dempster joins me now. Good morning, Mr. Dempster. By the way, I'm all
Good
choked
morning,
up.
Guys.
I'm all choked up. I'm sorry you couldn't be there last week when Harry came back to do the anthem. Man, it was great.
Oh, I heard he was out having a good time with the fans and having a few ice cold butts around the stadium. And yeah, I caught a little bit of the highlights. Looks like he was enjoying himself.
When it's this hot out, is it better to play baseball as opposed to in April when it's 30 degrees?
Well, for a hitter, yes. For a pitcher, no. I always enjoyed, especially coming from Canada, where, pretty much any weather that you could actually get outside and play in was fine with me. So I always enjoyed the cold weather because hitters' hands don't like being torn up by that inside fastball. But when it's warm like this, the ball's flying, and it is. It's a great time. You get loose really fast. You don't really have to worry about being loose for the game. So I know those hitters are enjoying the nice, warm Chicago weather right now, and the ball's carrying. Ask Anthony Rizzo.
But the worst thing to be is a position player with a slow guy on the mound, a guy that takes a week and a half between pitches. Who's the slowest guy you ever worked with?
Slowest guy, probably Matt Clement. I mean, he was Steve Traxel-esque.
Oh, man, I never saw anybody as slow as Traxel.
Well, that is incredible. It's actually amazing that guys didn't just actually fall asleep in their position.
Hey, guys, do guys ever complain about it in game? They go, dude, you're killing me. It's 115 degrees.
Oh, yeah. Like, I remember a teammate of mine in Florida, Kevin Millar, who's gone on to huge things hosting Intentional Talk now. He would actually, if a pitcher was slow, not in between innings, he was playing first base, he would actually yell, hurry up, throw the ball! Throw it! I mean, it was pretty comical, but it was true. It's like, you know, you always say defense is, you know, they need that, right? They need the more you keep your guys on the toes and things like that, the better plays they're going to make, and you don't want them falling asleep out there. You got to work quick. And I think, you know, you look at our rotation, we got guys who do that. They all work quick. I mean, Lackey, all he wants to do is get back on the mound and have you put down the number one and throw the fastball. So, you know, the guys in our rotation work really fast.
Well, you know, there's everybody at the highest level of teaching golf will tell you, you don't have to concentrate for 4 hours. You got to concentrate for 15 or 30 seconds at a time. And the same thing goes for a position player in baseball. Once a pitcher locks in and goes for the pitch, and it's a great thing for little leaguers to watch too, Demps. You see the infielders, they take the gloves off, or the outfielders, they get into position, but they do it right at the moment they need to focus, and that's how you stay locked in, I would guess, right?
No, 100%. I think it's actually the total statistic number-wise during a Major League Baseball game that I think your average Major League Baseball game, I think it's 8 minutes, is the actual amount of time that you're focused on each individual pitch. And I think, you know, it's funny because it's something so small, 8 minutes in the grand scheme of things isn't very much, and somehow guys do take pitches off, they forget. But the real good guys, you know, our team's incredible about it. I've been preaching to my son to watch these guys. You know, he's 10 now, and the coaches are constantly telling them, hey, you know, be ready, ready positions, and you watch these guys. It's every time right before the pitch, they're ready position because, you know, you can sit there and sometimes get caught up and, oh, it's 3-0, he's not swinging here, and all it takes is one time to get caught off guard and you lose a game because of that. You know, you just be ready right there in that moment. And I think, you know, when kids are at a ballpark, you know, sometimes somebody takes their son or their daughter to the game and we're watching all these different things or we're looking for the home run. I always try to tell my son, hey, watch Ben's over straight here. Watch every pitch right before when he gets ready. You know, the best I ever saw it at Dustin Pedroia in Boston. Absolutely incredible. His ready position every single time was phenomenal.
Yeah, it's a great tip, yeah, though. Look away from the ball. Watch what everybody else is doing.
Yep. Ryan, what's your take on the deal the Cubs made yesterday to acquire pitcher Mike Montgomery from the Mariners?
Oh, yeah, I love it. I mean, you know, hey, everybody talks about Andrew Miller and Aroldis Chapman and all these different left-handed relievers out there and Will Smith from the Brewers. This kid out of Seattle, he's got electric stuff. Sometimes when you're pitching or playing up in the Pacific Northwest, people forget about you. And I think he's got the type of stuff that down the road can play like an Andrew Miller and play like these guys. So I think, you know, it's a great move without having to get rid of, you know, let's face it, if anybody wants Andrew Miller from the Yankees, you're going to have to give up a whole bunch to get him, and not taking anything away from Vogelbach. I mean, he's, you know, a tremendous young hitter. He can absolutely mash right-handed hitting, but, you know, where does he play with us? We already got trying to figure out space of where to put guys like Kyle Schwarber when he comes back. So I think it's a great move. I think it really helps our bullpen and the future of our team. You got a guy that's controllable until, I think, 2021, and a really kind of under the radar move that's going to pay huge dividends for us for sure.
How delicate is the balance when you've got a team that's 20 games over 500 and has been in first place since opening day, and now you got the trading deadline a little under 2 weeks away, just trying to maintain what you have going, improve it, but not do anything that might somehow disrupt the chemistry in the clubhouse?
Yeah, I'm sure that's a concern for sure, a tough balance. You know, it's got to be the right fit. I think Joe Maddon said that. It's got to be the right fit. And I think, you know, I've been on teams, hey, man, we had great chemistry with Boston Red Sox in 2013 when we won the World Series. And we go out and make a trade for Jake Beebe. And ultimately, that move right there pushed me to the bullpen for the end of the season. But you know what? When you're about the right things and that's going out there for the right reasons, and that's to win a championship, guys in that locker room are going to do whatever is asked of them. You see it on a day-to-day basis where they go play multiple positions. You know, I think it's about winning, and that's all that matters to them. So if you get a guy that can help you win ball games, everybody's going to fall in line. And and Theo and Jed and everybody there, the guys in charge of making those decisions know that. They've put together an incredible ball club already, and any move that's made is just going to enhance that and make the ball club even better going forward.
We'll let you go, but first, BGM for a second of the White Sox. Are you buying or selling at the trade deadline?
Oh, man. I don't know, man. I looked at it, and it's so hard nowadays to sell because with the extra wild card, if you can get hot in September and start playing good baseball down the stretch, they have the pieces there, but you also got to think about the future of that ball club. I give myself another week here, 10 days. I mean, you don't really have 10 days. You got a week left to really make that decision. But if things don't, you know, if you don't get on a 6-1 roll, I mean, you're chasing a bunch of teams in front of you, you know, dumping guys, maybe a Quintana versus, you know, I'm not trading a Chris Sale. That contract and that kind of pitching, I also want to win next year. So if you can get some pieces that really help you, you know, I think you're either one or the other. Listen, you're either all in or you're all out. So we're either completely rebuilding or we're coming to the fact that we're going to compete for the rest of the year and try and get there. And if that doesn't work out, that we're going to be loaded for next year.
Very strong political answer by the next president of the United States, Ryan Dempster.
Thanks for that.
Let's go to the seventh inning stretch. Thanks, Debs. There's something wrong with him. Back with Andre live in Cleveland next on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
You got to figure out why I'm still shanking the ball.
You know.
And what's the problem? I'm catching on the hosel, right?
Yeah, right.
Moving my head.
Yeah.
I'm laying it off.
Well, that too.
I'm pronating.
When you're not supinating.
I'm clearing too early. I'm clearing too late. My God, my swing feels like an unfolding lawn chair. I look like a fool.
But enough about me. 9:10, almost 9:11. Sandberg's here. I've asked Sandberg to join us because part of her gig here, Dave, is to listen to me whine about my golf swing.
I think that's part of all of our gigs.
So it's your pain as well?
I don't mind it because I'll whine back.
And in working and doing some stuff with the first tee, you got to know Pat Goss a little bit, right?
I did. I went to a thing called Golf Talk with Pat Goss at the Glen Club about a month ago. Through the first tee, he did a chipping, pitching, and putting clinic with us on Wildcat Range.
This is the Glen Club, beautiful Glen Club with my friend Emil Esposito, pro emeritus out there. And I'm pretty sure I'm right about this. I think Luke Donald funded that range, or if not all of it, the majority of it, because the end of it is a teaching range, and there's a section that's specific to Northwestern golf.
Correct, and they have little Northwestern flags, and it's really cute.
It's the Wildcat Golf Academy.
Is that what it is?
Mm-hmm.
And Pat Goss has forgotten more about golf than I'll ever know, and I've developed a case. I used to be a pretty good chipper.
Let me just tell you, he helped immensely in this. It was just like 10 of us standing there, and he told us a few things. Things like, don't worry about if your head moves. Like,
really?
Things that you
Does he know how big my head is?
Just like little things. And I've been chipping and pitching and putting so well. And every time we play, my Pat says, wow, Pat Goss really had an impact on you. Because I'm doing so well.
Well, let's get him in here. Pat Goss from Northwestern University. I've got the yips, Pat. Fix me.
Oh, Steve, that's bad. But I'm glad to hear I helped Mary a little bit because I really appreciated your tin cup intro there. I'm so worried most of my lessons sound like that one, but somehow Mary found the nuggets in there.
Here's the problem, Pat. I've always been a pretty good chipper, and I'm an okay putter. I'm streaky like most people. But for whatever reason, recently, I got the chip yips. And when you yip a few, your confidence goes out the window.
Yeah, it does. And I've actually done a lot of research on the yips and have helped some players get through them, Steve, so you're talking to the right guy. We can do this.
All right, so this is limited to what you can do to cure me, but the first step to a cure is admitting you have a problem. So over the phone, I've heard every tip ever given to mankind. You know, keep the handle ahead of the hands and don't break the wrist, don't move the head, all the things we know. Give me something I can focus on. Give me one thing.
Well, first I'm going to tell you that all that stuff you just muttered to me, that was all wrong.
That's what he told me.
We got to start there, Steve. Yeah.
Good. I wanted to wash my brain of all of this.
Especially the handle ahead of the head so much in short game. That's one of the really big misnomers that everybody was told, including me as a kid, and it's not what we see the best pitchers and chippers do. So you got to get the head of the club moving. You can't drag the handle so far forward if you want to make good contact. But I'll tell you this about the yips, especially, and we're talking chipping, not putting, right?
Chipping, exactly, yeah.
So everybody I've ever taught that had the chipping yips, they swung the club too far back inside with the head too closed, turned down towards the ground.
Mm-hmm.
You got to get the club going up and out more with more loft, toe more up. Then are you right-handed, I assume?
Yes,
Steve?
I am. Mm-hmm.
You got to swing more down and left on the way through.
So almost, like almost a slice cut?
It's going to feel like a slice. What people always forget, in golf, we don't swing linearly towards the target. We don't swing in a straight line in the towards the target, except in putting and driving. Every other shot is swung downward and inside, feeling like a slice.
So then,
just hit it straight.
So slice cut and let it lag. Let the club lag. Don't worry about it in.
No, don't let it lag. I want it going the other way. I don't want the head falling behind. I want the head going forwards.
But how am I going to control loft that way for a chip?
Well, you're going to use less loft.
All right.
If you want it to run, use your 9-iron, use your pitching wedge. I'll give you the last tip for anybody who has the yips, and this goes for putting and chipping both. Generally, most people, you have a good chance of getting rid of the yips if you change the way you hold it. It totally changes the feedback you're getting from a neurological standpoint. So I would tell if you have the chip yips, stand the handle up higher, hold it more in the palms just to chip and pitch. Get the club going more outside and more down and left on the way through, and you'll have a chance.
You like a putter grip on it, or use your regular grip? Because I go reverse overlap on a putter grip.
Put it way in the palms. Even if you want to use a putter grip, if you're going to pitch it a little further, you can't quite do the putter grip. But mm-hmm. Luke Donald, he changes his grip in short game. He'll hold it more in the palms. He'll really weaken his top hand. You know, so for a right-handed player, he's taking his left hand and turning it more under the grip for short game. The more it's in your palms and the handle's higher, you'll have a chance.
And you're a big advocate of moving around to different clubs depending on your situation, because I was always a wedge or even a 60, you know, one club, two club, gap wedge maybe of the third club guy, and never going farther down in the bag.
Yeah, we're seeing, you know, most really good players do a majority of their pitching, so when they want it to go in the air, they're going to do that with their 56 or 60, one of their most lofted clubs. But when you're talking about getting the ball on the ground and getting it running, I really want you to use less loft so that you don't have to drag the handle and de-loft the club so much to do it.
All right, so here's this is already giving me something to work on here. Yeah.
Take the club. Screw you up for no less than 4 to 6 weeks.
I got a big tournament this weekend. I'm going to try to remember it before I forget it. But bring the club back straight, if not even a little bit outside the line.
Out and up.
Out and up. And then come back to the left, because I'm right-handed.
Yeah.
So it's going to feel a little bit like a slice. Don't worry about locking your hands in. Don't worry about chicken winging it.
No.
And let the club do the work when it comes to the loft.
Yep. Let the head of the club do the work. You'll be right back on track.
I'll be on tour by the weekend. Dave.
Well, yes. May I ask a question?
Haven't you taken lessons from Pat?
Please.
Yeah, it's been a while. Okay. It's been a while.
All right.
But, okay, so sand, I've always been told you want to hit. You want to hit the sand behind the ball, correct? And actually strike the sand to propel the ball out of the trap, right?
That's correct. My good fellow Wildcat Dave Ennett is right on his game right
sand
now.
Sand moves the ball,
okay.
Yes.
Okay, but Pat, what if you're playing, the sand is wet and packed hard? What do you do?
What you're saying is, when do you chip the ball cleanly out of the bunker?
Yes.
Is there an occasion when you do that?
Yeah.
Rarely. Now, I tell you, I've had people putt it from bunkers sometimes, depending on the design. I've been some places where it was pretty easy to putt it out. One thing, you know, we've really learned in studying amateur golf from a statistical standpoint, bunkers are a real hazard for the amateur player. And it's frustrating for the amateur player because you watch those guys on TV and the commentator says, oh, he wants it in the bunker. That's so much easier for him, and it's not for the average player. But first, the general bunker tip, Dave, is I don't care how far you hit behind the ball. I care how far your divot gets in front of the ball. Every person, 100%, nobody's broke this streak for 25 years. Everybody that struggles from the bunker takes a divot that's too far behind the ball. You got to get your divot as much in front of the ball as it was behind the ball.
So hit the sand, hit the sand and keep swinging.
Yeah, it's not only keep swinging, you got to be swinging the club in a direction that divot's getting forward. Everybody's so concerned about hitting their 2 or 3 inches behind the sand, keeping their head down. They're bottoming it out 8-10 inches. I need you really getting the swing going way more forward towards your front foot. Take practice swings where you overdo it. Take divots that are in front of your front foot, and then take that same feel with you and go hit the shot, and you'll be better off. But as far as the hard-packed sand, one, you don't want to open the club because you don't want it bouncing. So you want to square the club up a little bit so it digs a little bit more in those hard-packed sands, and you're going to take shorter swings with not as much speed.
And I always felt like whenever I got in a good groove in the sand, it was because I could see the splash. And by that, I mean you'd hear the thud. Mm-hmm. Love that thud in the bunker. And you'd visualize the splash of the sand as it comes out of the bunker. And that line gave me the line on where I wanted the ball to go. And that's the line I'd swing the club. That's when I felt like I was locked in.
Yeah, and I think that's smart stuff. You got to remember, we're trying to set up to expose all this cool bounce they put on the club that allows it to not dig in the sand. It'll allow it to skim through it. But you're trying to thud aggressively downward, and this bounce keeps the club moving. If your club is getting stuck in the sand, you're not set up in a way to expose the bounce, and you got to start laying the handle more behind the ball, and you got to really pancake the club flat to expose the bounce. Then you can thud aggressively into the sand, and it won't stick.
The bounce, by the way, is the width on the bottom of the club that kind of shovels the sand for you, moves it along. You know, Pat, you're pretty good at this. I guess it's not your first day.
No, I've thought a lot about this stuff. This is the stuff I lay awake at night and dream about right here.
Tell us what's going on with the First Tee.
First Tee's fun. I became president of the board of the First Tee this past year. I've been on the board since probably 07, and I grew up in Crystal Lake, Illinois, and somebody was exposed to golf through municipal golf, and so anything that gives us the opportunity to expose kids to the values of the game, to learn the game, to grow the game, I'm all in, because I've seen the value and the impact the game's had on me personally and other people. So I love the First Tee. Obviously, it's a great organization. Most people are familiar with it through its national branding. But we're teaching life skills in a direct parallel line with golf skills. You know, for a kid to progress through this program, they're going to have to pass life skills test at the same time that they pass golf skills tests, and they keep moving forward. And we have an exciting time of growth, and we're reaching nearly 40,000 children throughout the Chicagoland area. We have 17 golf courses. We're in elementary schools. We're with partnerships with the Park District, Boys and Girls Clubs, all kinds of youth development organizations, and we're growing and having a great time. Very fortunate to have Luke Donald's support, which really helps us as well.
Yeah, and at a time where the game really does need help growing, with Tiger out of the game, at least for the year, I think the First Tee's never been more important for the stamp it puts on the game. But the biggest thing, as you said, and the most important part, is giving access to the game that kids might not otherwise have.
No, absolutely. And we're trying so hard to continue improving and build facilities for youth development. You know, as you know, there's a lot of things in our city going on with the kids, and there's a critical need right now to provide these safe havens for youth in Chicago where they can go have a safe place, get exposed to people that really care about them. And if we can teach them a game along the way that helps them learn some values, that's a good thing.
You know, Dave curses a lot on the course. You got anything for that?
I don't believe that. I know Dave Bennett well, and I have never heard him curse.
Maybe it was me.
It might have been Steve.
It probably was me. Pat, congrats on all the success. Thanks. You gave me something to work on today. I don't care if it's going to be 120 degrees. I'm going to be out there having Pat Goss fix me, and I appreciate your time.
You're welcome. My pleasure. Thanks for having me on, and as always, go Cats.
And support the First Tee, 922.
I got to come see him.
Coming up, Andrea Darlis and Mayor Rudy Giuliani, live from Cleveland. She talked to Giuliani just a few minutes ago. We'll give you a clip of that coming up. Big story, and then Bill and Wendy at 10 on 720 WGN. $9.25, if you're flying Southwest out of Midway, you're probably not flying Southwest out of Midway because the lines are nutty. Ryan Burrow's been keeping an eye on the story. We just got a call from Andy Mazur, said his flight got canceled. What's exactly going on, Ryan?
Yeah, right now, I mean, it was a computer glitch, computer errors, a system-wide outage that started yesterday. We saw hundreds of flights canceled yesterday. Today, another 221 flights. I just got off the phone with Andy. His flight was supposed to get off to New York at 8 o'clock this morning. He's been rebooked for an 11 o'clock flight. So, and I asked him, you know, what's it like there? People angry? People frustrated? Do people know what's going on? He says, most of the people know what's going on. You know, they've all got their smartphone apps and they've all been communicating with text messages. You know, Southwest Airlines will do that. So it's kind of like a snowstorm in the middle of July, right? Everyone's just kind of hanging out, waiting to get rebooked.
Dave Enn is supposed to fly out of Midway tomorrow. How's his chances?
As of now, good. I mean, it looks like today they're just going to kind of shake all this out, but who knows? Who knows what tomorrow will bring?
Oh, come on, Ryan, you can do better than that.
It's going to be fantastic.
Thank you.
There you go. Where are you headed, Dave?
Where are you headed?
Kansas City.
Kansas City.
Yes.
Get some ribs.
Checking on the ranch? What are you doing there?
I have a wedding.
Oh, you got a wedding? Yes. Okay. Thank you for the update, Ryan, and thank you, Andy Mazur, for letting us know that you're still stuck at Midway. So if you ever wanted to meet Andy Mazur, that'd be a good time to go to Midway. He's sitting around for a couple of hours. At 9:27, let's take one more break. We'll come back, and Andrea Darlis will play back a little bit of her conversation with Rudy Giuliani from Cleveland, covering the convention, as Ro Khan will join us as well before 10, also live from Cleveland on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
We ought to have someone who isn't springing out of bed to tweet in a frantic response to the latest polls.
He is like a little baby. Soft, weak little baby by comparison. But for lying, he's the best I've ever seen. He's the best. Lying Ted Cruz.
Donald, you're a sniveling coward, and leave Heidi the hell alone.
Well, he's a cheater. He's a cheater. He's a dirty, rotten cheat.
He was a failed senator. He couldn't get anything passed.
This man is a pathological liar. He lies practically every word that comes out of his mouth. A narcissist at a level I don't think this country's ever seen.
People, let me tell you about my best friend. He's a warm-hearted person who loved me till the end.
Hard to believe those two didn't make up by last night. Ro Khan joins me live from Cleveland. Were you in the room when Ted didn't endorse Trump?
No. We were. it's kind of good. There's a street that has been, you know, it's sort of a festival street right outside the Green Zone here. That's good. They've got these gigantic screens up, so we decided to go out and watch it while the people were watching it and see what was going on there.
What was their reaction outside?
Stunned silence and bartender, another round, please.
So people had their priorities in order.
Oh yeah, for sure. The street festival of this is really interesting. I've never seen anything, and I know Andrea can attest to this too. You cannot imagine the kind of wackiness that's going on in the streets here, because really the people who are here are very conflicted. And Ted Cruz this morning did a unity breakfast, which I think that's the wrong
word.
That's
hilarious after last night.
Yeah, I think it's the wrong word. And
did they forget the DIS part of the sign?
Right. Well, that's the interesting thing, is that he had a bunch of his own supporters thanking him for, you know, standing up for conservative values and blah, 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 blah. But then he had some people in the room that, you know, want to take him to task. Why aren't you supporting the nominee, the candidate, the party? And actually, I thought that Ted Cruz made a very good, I mean, the man's, you know, spoken in front of the, argued in front of the Supreme Court a number of times. He made a very compelling argument for why he just can't do that personally.
His compelling argument was what? The man insulted my wife. The man's a liar. What did he say?
Well, there was a little bit of he insulted my wife because, you know, somebody was like, you know, you're just taking this personally. And he's like, no, I'm not. I mean, this is a guy that, you know, will use that kind of tactic and is inappropriately temperamented to be the president of the United States. So he went down that line. But the other piece was that he doesn't stand up for conservative values. He doesn't stand up for the things that Ted Cruz and the conservative wing of the Republican Party believe are important. And I think that you're seeing that schism. I hate to get all serious with you, Steve, but you're seeing that schism in the arena.
Right.
Every day. You're seeing it on the streets every day. You're hearing it in the restaurants and bars at night after the whole thing is over. Arguments taking. Last night I was with the New York delegation of all people, and they were conflicted until Megyn Kelly walked by, and then they all agreed on one thing.
That she was pretty?
Yes.
Yeah. Was Roger Ailes behind her saying, I'm sorry?
And no, but it seemed like everybody there's like half the people here look like Roger Ailes. I think that's interesting.
Well, that's part of the big Roger Ailes lookalike contest they won at the bar down the street. So here's the thing: as far as unity goes, the national media has tried to play off the only time all week there was unity is when the majority of the crowd is chanting, "Put her in jail" or whatever.
Yeah,
the jail,
lock her up. Yeah.
Yeah, lock her up.
Hillary is the only unifying element here.
Is that what you've seen as well?
Yeah, absolutely. That and and I don't think, and Ted Cruz made this point today. You know, I had great sympathy for Ted Cruz today because he those are not words I thought would easily flip out of my mouth.
No, that's what I said earlier. I dislike both of them so intensely. It's hard to figure out which one I'm supporting now.
But,
you know, based on last night.
Yeah. You know, well, Hillary and Trump and Cruz. And it's just that there's nobody that's very no good guys in this yet. Except for you and me, Steve, but I think that, you know, if you get back to your to the idea of where are the people here, I think that if Hillary is the one coalescing item, Ted Cruz said it today, you can't win on Hillary is bad.
No, you got to say what you're going to do.
Yeah.
And if Trump goes through tonight, the biggest moment of the entire campaign with 25 or 30 million people allegedly watching, this is bigger than the debates. This is his moment. He's one of two people who could be the next president of the United States, unless my new guys, the libertarians, finally get their 15%.
Yeah, I heard you. I see what you've done here. Yeah. You've made the full turn toward them.
I'm trying to bring them up to 15. But it's one of two people that could be the next president of the United States. This is his moment. And if he doesn't say what he's going to do tonight, and if it's just bashing Hillary, and if it's just how great the crowd is and how popular he is, why would anyone vote for him?
So he told the New York Times last night.
Oh, yeah, a little NATO thing, yeah.
Well, the NATO thing was one thing, but then at the end, they said, well, you know, what should we take away from this? Because the New York Times goes, he goes, the people really like me, okay? And so,
such a nut.
I mean, I know. It's like, okay, all right, yeah, whatever. There was a moment last night, Steve, that we were in the still in the building for. I could not believe. Phil Ruffin is a business partner of some level with Donald Trump.
Okay.
And it was like Mo Green came out and made a speech for Donald Trump.
Is that right?
It was a guy, little, like, overly tan guy with these glasses, you know, those like two-tone glasses where you can't see his eyes because they're darkening because of the lights in the room. And he's talking about how much money they made together. And, we went into Las Vegas and he wanted to pay $100 million for this thing. And I said, Don, I don't like the deal. And then Don sold it for $300 million. And then Mar-a-Lago, we're in Florida and he paid $40 million for Mar-a-Lago. And I said, Don, I still don't like the deal. And then he made $100 million. And this guy's going on and on and on. And I'm thinking, who is this appealing to?
Right, right. Other than you two clowns, because nobody identifies with that, and it doesn't affect any of us at all in any way. And Trump is too blind to understand that.
Yeah. Well, right.
The only reason you feel bad for Cruz this morning is because your impression has gotten so much better of Cruz?
That's right, Steve. It was like that, though. He did say bad things about Heidi. No one talks about my wife or my father.
It was weird. It got so weird. But, you know, the thing is, it's the
all 911 now for that voice.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Right. You don't want that. You definitely don't want that kind of moment where the guy, you know, like against a wall. This is a very this is almost indescribable. And I guess we're getting paid to be here and describe it. Right.
But, yeah, that's it. That's it. You have no choice but to describe it. In a weird way, it sets an odd bar for next week in Philadelphia. Because what are the Democrats going to do to be as interesting, even if interesting means frightening?
They won't be. They won't be at all. And, you know, and this is true. Over the years, I've noticed that the Democratic convention is far more controlled.
Yeah.
It's ironic. It's controlled, and there's a lot of discipline in the Democratic Party when it comes to this particular event. And in the Republican Party, I've noticed that there isn't discipline, which is, you know, plays against type, right? But in this case, it's a free-for-all. You do have such passionate people on two different sides of the coin here. And then you got the business Republicans. And the business Republicans are the guys, you know, that are, you know, walking up and down the streets, and all they want is low taxation and low restriction on their business enterprises. And they want any kind of white-collar welfare they can get, too. So they're here trying to just schmooze power. And they're pure business guys, and they don't take the emotions of that. Maybe that's where that Phil Ruffin guy came in last night on stage, which is, hey, he's going to speak to those people. But those people are like, who is this old creep, right? He looked like Regis gone bad. It was like a very weird.
I'd love to have him speak tonight. He sounds like a guy that I'd want to see.
Oh my! Just go to YouTube and look up Phil Ruffin at the RNC, and It is like a springtime for Hitler moment. Your mouth drops open. You're staring at the stage, and you're like, no, they're kidding, right? This couldn't be real.
Now, the over-under on when Trump goes off the prompter tonight on this show is 5 minutes or less. What do you got?
Oh, I would say it's about a minute and a half.
A minute and a half?
Yeah. I don't think he can control himself. I think this is going to be the moment he's got that stage. And this is the thing. He's great on the prompter when it's either him alone in it, you know, like reading off of the prompter like he did on Monday night. Or, I'm sorry, Tuesday night when he was there accepting the nomination from Trump Tower. And they did that big video roll-up into it with the Trump Tower gold logo, that sort of thing he's good at. But in a big room like this, he won't be able to control himself because he's got to be that moment. He's got to be the guy, right? And he's like, ah, screw him.
Right.
You know, he's going to just, I don't care what Paul Manafort told me before. I'm going to go. So I'd say he'll keep coming back to the prompter. Hardest working guy in show business is his prompter operator.
Right. Right, because he's going to have to somehow figure out where the Trump brain is at any given time.
Right.
Don't you picture, like, the fight at the end of Blazing Saddles where it spills over into the studio? I figure, like, the whole thing turning into a rumble tonight, and they end up over at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Right, everybody punching everybody else, and then, oh, my God, and now a musical just broke out. Come on, girls! Get it together!
Wait, not in the face!
There's two Mel Brooks references.
That's tremendous.
Yeah.
Rokan this afternoon at 3. What are you doing? Anything fun?
Yeah, well, we're going to have David Muir from ABC.
Oh, good.
Is very
good.
Important. All that fits, everything we can jam in on the last day.
All right, jam it this afternoon at 3 o'clock. Ro doing a great job from Cleveland. And so is Andre, who's back with us one more time before we wrap it up next on 720 WGN. .954 One more time with Andrea Darlis on her first morning in Cleveland. Good morning to you again.
Hey, Steve. I failed to mention before. We've been talking throughout the morning, but a lot of people are asking about protests and security here. As I said yesterday, is crazy and it's wonderful, and we're going through all the proper steps. The wait times are high, but there have been very few protests. There have been a couple of incidents. But all these protests, and I even use that word loosely, Steve, because it's been maybe 50 people or so. I've never seen massive gatherings. They're supposed to have a stand against Trump protest today, but they say it's just very orderly. It's going to go over the bridge right by the lake here, and they're not expecting any problems or anything like that. So it's been relatively calm since I've been here.
Well, that's a good thing. It's a very good thing. Philadelphia has the challenge next, and you'll be there next week as well.
Absolutely. And I ran into a friend of yours, Bolingbrook Mayor Roger Clare.
There you go.
Illinois. Yeah, yeah. He says, by the way, you owe him money. No, he didn't say that. I'm kidding.
He could be right. I don't know.
But he's part of the Illinois delegation, and I spoke with him just a few minutes ago, and I asked him why he thinks Donald Trump is going to make a good president.
People are scared, and they want somebody to do something about it. They want a Reagan or a John Wayne or somebody to step in and say, that's it, folks.
And you think Trump will do it?
Oh, I do. I'm convinced of that. And that's why I think the polls are showing people are fed up and they think he can do it.
Listen, I like Roger. I like what Roger's done for Bolingbrook for all these years. I also think he's completely wrong. Yes, there are a lot of people who are scared. But one of the things we've done in this country in the last year is overblow all the negativity. And what do we see every morning, Andre, in this studio? We see people whistling while they work. They're walking by. They're living their lives. They're going on about their business. There's certainly a million things to fix. But this idea that everybody is petrified and our only reaction is fear and anger, well, he's just wrong. I love Roger, but he's wrong.
I agree with you, too, Steve. I've been calling Trump. I've been saying that people are reluctantly supporting him. That's kind of the mood that I've gotten, not obviously from that cut from Roger Clare. But people saying, you know what, this is our nominee. We're going to try and rally around him. That's why that Illinois delegate was so upset today when somebody said, well, it was kind of fun to boo Ted Cruz. He said, no, we all have to unify as a party, even around Ted Cruz and Donald Trump. I should also add and probably end with this by saying all the Cleveland bars downtown have put in a permit. Most of the bars close at 2 o'clock, Steve. They have put in a permit to stay open until 4 o'clock tonight. And people don't know if that's going to be celebratory or it's just because the economic impact has been less than they thought it would be, and they're trying to recoup some of the profits before everybody heads out of town.
What time is your flight tomorrow?
4 a.m. No, I'm kidding. Right after the show. So I'll be with you guys in the morning doing some follow-up, and then I head home.
I think the Cleveland airport's going to be nutty, right?
Yeah, and I'm flying Southwest, too. So can you make a call to Southwest for me and make sure all their computer glitches are fixed?
Yep. Got it done. Nice job today.
Great.
I'll talk to you in a few minutes.
Talk to you tomorrow. Bye.
That's Andrea Dallas.